the three-act tragedy.
It happened at a house party given by the celebrated actor Sir Charles Cartwright at Crow's Nest, his home in Devon, where I was a guest. A charming old clergyman, the Reverend Babington, had suddenly dropped dead while drinking a cocktail. I myself saw nothing suspicious, and upon examination it was found that the glass had contained only gin and vermouth. But Sir Charles was not satisfied. He was convinced that murder had been committed.
We present John Moffat as Hercule Poirot and George Cole as Mr. Satterthwaite in Agatha Christie's three-act tragedy.
The second act of our tragedy began peacefully enough. I had taken myself for a few days to the French Riviera and was sitting in the public gardens at Monte Carlo, doing nothing in particular, watching a bored little child tugging at his mother's sleeve.
Mummy, isn't there anything to do?
Darling, isn't it enough to have come abroad and be in the beautiful sunshine?
No, it isn't. There's nothing to do.
Monsieur Poirot, what a very pleasant surprise to find you in Monte Carlo.
Mr. Satterthwaite, oh, I am delighted to see you. Please, sit down, I beg you.
Oh, thank you. You know, everyone seems to be here. Not half an hour ago, I ran across Sir Charles Cartwright.
Sir Charles? And what a curious coincidence. It was at his house in Devon that we last met, was it not?
He's given it up now.
Huh? Given it up? How very surprising.
I don't know whether it's all that surprising. Sir Charles is not really the kind of man who likes to live permanently away from the world.
Yes, that is very true, but I am surprised for another reason. It seemed to me that Sir Charles had a different motive for staying at Lumos. A very charming motive, am I not right?
Mm.
The little demoiselle who calls herself so amusingly the egg.
Hermione Lytton-Gore. Mm. So you noticed that, did you?
It leaped to the eye. And I have the heart very susceptible to lovers. You too, I think. And La Jeunesse, it is always touching.
She is the reason why Sir Charles left Lumen. He was running away.
What, from Mademoiselle Egg? But it was obvious that he adored her. Why should he run?
I'm afraid you don't quite understand our Anglo-Saxon complexes.
Of course, it is a very good tactic. Run from a woman and immediately she follows. Doubtless a man of much experience like Sir Charles knows that.
I don't think it was actually quite like that. But what are you doing here, Monsieur Poirot? Taking a holiday?
Oh, my time is all holidays now. I have achieved all that I wish to do. And now, I retire. Je m'amuse.
Mommy, play with me. I'm poor.
You see, Mr. Satterthwaite, when I was a boy, I was poor. We were a large family and I had to get on in the world. I entered the police force. I worked hard. I began to make a name for myself. I acquired an international reputation. At last, I was due to retire. Then came the war. I was injured. I came a sad and weary refugee to England. A kind lady gave me hospitality. She died. Not naturally, no. She was killed. And so I set my wits to work. I employed the little Greysells. I discovered the murderer.
Ah, you're speaking of the mysterious affair at Stiles Court.
Oh, I am flattered that you remember the case, Mr. Satterthwaite. It was that experience that made me realize I was not yet finished. My powers were, in fact, stronger than ever. Then began my second career, that of a private inquiry agent in your country. I have solved many fascinating and baffling problems. The psychology of human nature, it is wonderful. I began to grow rich. Someday, I said to myself, I will have all the money I need. I will realize all my dreams.
Mommy, why won't you play with me?
My friend, beware of the day when your dreams come true. That child over there, doubtless he too has dreamed of coming abroad, of how different everything would be. Do you understand?
I understand. You are not amusing yourself.
Exactly.
Have you seen this, Monsieur Poirot, in the morning paper?
Hmm?
This paragraph here.
It is with great regret that we announce the death of Sir Bartholomew Strange. Ah, this is the rather distinguished gentleman who was at Sir Charles's house party, the one he called Tolly.
Yes, but read on, Monsieur Poirot.
Sir Bartholomew was entertaining a party of friends at Melfort Abbey, his house in Yorkshire. He appeared to be in perfect health and spirits, and his demise occurred quite suddenly at the end of dinner. He was chatting with his friends and drinking a glass of port when he had a sudden seizure and died almost instantaneously. It is very similar to the way in which that old clergyman died. A quite remarkable coincidence.
I think it's more than that, Monsieur Poirot. And Sir Charles is certain that there is a connection between the two deaths. He has gone to the offices of the Wagon Lee Company to book tickets for him and myself on the night train to London.
Oh, what zeal he has, Sir Charles. So determined to play the role of the amateur detective. Or is there another reason?
Well, as it happens, he had just received a letter from Miss Lytton Gore. I was with him when it was delivered.
It's an appeal for help. She's begging me to return.
Is this the first letter you've had from her?
No, I have one just after I got here, just giving me the local news and all that. I didn't answer it, of course. Didn't dare to. The girl had no idea why I'd gone away, and I didn't want to make a fool of myself.
And are you going to reply to this one?
Damn it, man, this is different. She was there at Melfort Abbey when it happened, when poor Tolly suddenly keeled over. Here, read it for yourself. The poor kid's obviously in a bit of a state.
You'll have seen by now, I expect, that Sir Bartholomew Strange is dead. Well, he died just the same way as Mr. Babington. It can't be coincidence. I'm worried to death. Couldn't you come home and do something? You see, I'm very concerned about someone. He had absolutely nothing to do with it, but things might look a bit odd. I can't explain it in a letter, but won't you come back? After all, it's your own friend who's been killed, and if you don't take a hand in it, perhaps no one will ever find out the truth. And I'm sure you could. I know it in my bones.
Who do you think she means by someone?
Manders, I suppose.
Was he there, then?
Well, he must have been. I can't imagine why. Tolly never met him except on that one occasion at my house. Why he should ask him to stay, I cannot imagine.
Well, we can easily settle that. There must have been some mention of the party in the society columns of one of the papers before all this happened.
Well, there's a stack of them over there.
Did Sir Bartholomew often give these house parties?
Three or four times a year. This one would have been for the St. Ledger.
Did he spend much of his time in Yorkshire?
He had a big sanatorium, nursing home, whatever you like to call it. He bought Melfort Abbey, restored it, and built a sanatorium in the grounds.
I found it. Good Lord.
What's the matter?
Nearly all the people at the house party were the same ones that were at yours.
Who?
Lady Lytton Gore and Egg, Captain and Mrs. Dacres, Angela Sutcliffe, Muriel Wills.
But no mention of Mr. Manders.
No. But you must admit the guest list stretches coincidence a bit far.
Yes, it is curious. And you are going back with Sir Charles?
Well, this sort of thing is rather in my line, Monsieur Poirot.
Ah, yes. Your experiences with the mysterious Mr. Quinn.
And I do happen to know the chief constable in that part of the world quite well.
Tell me, Mr. Satterthwaite, why did you not mention the matter of Sir Bartholomew's death as soon as you sat down here?
Oh, it didn't seem quite the moment at first. And then I had no wish to disturb your fascinating reminiscences. You yourself are not tempted to come back and take an interest in the case?
Oh, I think not. I am too old to rush backwards and forwards. And the Mediterranean, it is such a beautiful blue.
Then I will leave you to enjoy it. But should you wish to call on me in London, here is my card to remind you of my address.
I remained where I was for a quarter of an hour or so. But it seemed that the Mediterranean was no longer as blue as it had been.
I've done that, Mummy. What shall I do next?
It was a good question. I thought that perhaps it was time for me to take a walk to the Wagon Lee offices. but I was going to take my time. I had no wish to interfere in the investigation of the admirable Sir Charles and the meticulous Mr. Satterthwaite.
Delighted to meet you, Sir Charles. My wife is a very keen playgoer. She's one of your greatest fans, as the Americans say.
Well, I'm very honoured, Colonel.
I gather that Sir Bartholomew Strange was by way of being a friend of yours.
A very old friend.
He was very popular around here, of course. Last man in the world, you'd expect to be murdered, but murder is what it looks like.
Sir Charles and I have only just come back from abroad. We've only seen snippets here and there in the papers.
Well, let me tell you exactly how the matter stands. There's little doubt that the butler's the man we're after, a chap by the name of Ellis. He was a new man. Strange had only had him a fortnight. And the moment after the murder, he disappears, vanishes into thin air. Looks a bit fishy, huh?
You've no notion where he went.
Negligence on our part, you think? Well, I admit it damn well looks like it. The fellow answered all our questions quite satisfactorily. Gave the name of the London agency which obtained him the place. All very civil spoken, no signs of panic. Next thing, he'd gone, and the house was still under observation.
Quite extraordinary.
Now, apart from anything else, it seems a damn fool thing to do. I mean, why do a bolt and draw attention to himself if he wasn't suspected?
No, lost his nerve, got the wind up.
Have you verified the account he gave of himself?
Naturally. London agency confirms his story. He had a reference from Sir Horace Bird recommending him warmly. Trouble is, Sir Horace is in South Africa at the moment.
So the reference could have been forged, huh?
Exactly. We've wired to Horace, but it may be some time before we get a reply. Apparently he's on safari.
When exactly did the butler disappear?
Sometime during the night after the murder. He went to his room after we'd talked to him, and the following morning he was missing. His bed hadn't been slept in. One of the ladies staying at the Abbey, Miss Sutcliffe, the actress, well, you know her, I expect, Sir Charles.
Oh, very well indeed, yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, she suggested that the man had left the house by way of a secret passage. Sounds a bit Edgar Wallace, but it seems there really was such a thing. Strange was rather proud of it.
I understand that Sir Bartholomew died of nicotine poisoning.
That's right. Most unusual stuff to use. Though I understand that if a man's a heavy smoker, such as Strange was, it would tend to complicate matters. I mean, he might have died of nicotine poisoning in a natural way. Only, of course, this business was too sudden for that.
How was it administered?
We don't know that yet. According to the medical evidence, it could only have been swallowed a few minutes previous to death.
I understand they were drinking port.
Mm-hmm. And you'd expect the stuff to be in the port, but it wasn't. That glass contained nothing but port.
You see, Satterthwaite, it's the same. Exactly the same as before.
You're talking about the old clergyman who dropped dead at your house, Sir Charles.
How the devil did you get to hear of that?
From a very charming young lady, Miss Lytton Gore. She's gone back to Devon now. She was adamant there was some kind of link between the two cases, but I don't believe there's anything in it. It doesn't explain the flight of the butler, and you can depend on it, he is our man. Very likely he'll turn out to be a regular criminal. Unfortunately, we haven't got any fingerprints. We had an expert go over his bedroom and the butler's pantry, but had no luck.
But if it was the butler, what motive could he have had?
That, of course, is one of our difficulties. Strange might have caught him stealing or something of the sort.
Was anything actually missing from the house? Silver? Jewelry? Anything like that?
Nothing. At least not as far as we know.
Who actually was staying in the house?
We'll get Superintendent Crossfield in. He's the chap to give you all the details. Very reliable and most methodical.
It's a very odd case indeed. I've never come across nicotine poisoning before.
I thought it was the kind of disease you got from smoking too much.
To tell the truth, sir, so did I. But the doctor says it's an odourless liquid, pure alkaloid, and that a few drops of it are enough to kill a man almost instantly.
Pretty potent stuff.
And yet it's in pretty common use. They use nicotine solution for spraying roses.
Roses? Now, why should that ring a bell?
Anything fresh to report, Grossfield?
Oh, nothing definite, sir. We've had sightings of Ellis all over England. Durham, Ipswich, Balham. Mind you, the moment a man's description is circulated, people see him everywhere.
What exactly is the man's description?
John Ellis. Medium height, stoops slightly, grey hair, small side whiskers, dark eyes, husky voice, Tooth missing in upper jaw, noticeable when he smiles.
Very nondescript. Bar the side whiskers and the tooth. And the first will be off by now, and he'll be taking care not to smile.
Can you tell us who exactly was in Strange's party on the night of the crime, Crosby?
Lord and Lady Eden, Sir Jocelyn and Lady Campbell, Miss Angela Sutcliffe, Captain and Mrs. Dacres, Lady Mary and Miss Hermione Litton-Gore, Miss Muriel Wills, Mr. Oliver Manders.
The reports didn't mention Miss Wills, but I suppose they wouldn't. And young Manders was there, after all.
He wasn't one of the invited guests, I gather. No. The young gentleman ran his motorbike into the wall not far from the Abbey gates. Sir Bartholomew, who was, I understand, slightly acquainted with him, asked him to stay the night.
Rather a careless thing for the boy to do.
I fancy the young gentleman must have had one over the eight. I can't imagine how he could have managed to hit the wall the way he did if he was sober.
Well, thank you very much, Superintendent. Yeah, any objection to our going over to have a look round the Abbey, Colonel?
Of course not, Sir Charles. Though I doubt whether you'll find out anything I haven't already told you.
Poor old Tolly certainly made a good job of patching up the old abbey. Magnificent, don't you think?
Well, it must have cost him a pretty penny. So, what do you think? Was it the butler?
Of course it wasn't the butler. He's a red herring. He couldn't have had anything to do with old Babington's death.
You're still convinced the two deaths are connected?
They must be. Why were all the people who were at my place present at the second murder? It was a plan. Tolly's plan.
You mean he invited them all up here deliberately?
I'm certain of it. But we'd better be getting along to the house. You didn't know Tolly as well as I did. He kept his own counsel and was a very, very patient man.
But he thought the whole idea that Babington had been murdered was ridiculous.
Well, he may have said so, but I reckon he had suspicions of his own. He didn't talk about them, that wasn't his way. But quietly, in his own mind, he was building up a case. He knew that one of my guests was responsible for the crime, and he gathered them all up here for some kind of test.
But what about the people who weren't at your party? The Edens and the Campbells?
Camouflage, Satterthwaite. To make the whole thing less obvious.
Well, what do you think his plan was?
Well, how can we know? I'm not a magician. But there was a plan, and it went wrong. Because the murderer was one degree cleverer than Tolly reckoned. And he struck first.
He?
Or she. Poison is as much a woman's weapon as it is a man's. More so.
But there were certain people who weren't invited.
Well, I was in France, so were you. And he could hardly have invited poor old Babington's widow.
And I suppose young Manders is out of it, too. He only arrived by accident.
If that's what it was. And I can't really believe that the Lytton Gores had anything to do with Babington's death.
What about Angela Sutcliffe?
Angela? She's been a friend of Tolly's for years.
So that leaves us with the Dacres.
Well, I suppose they're more possible than anyone else. But for the life of me, I can't see why Freddie Dacres, who spends his life on the race course, or Cynthia, who makes a packet designing fabulously expensive clothes for women with more money than sense, should have any desire to remove a dear, insignificant old clergyman.
We've forgotten someone else.
Huh?
That writer woman who calls herself Anthony Astor.
Miss Muriel Wills of Tooting. What is there about her that continually makes one forget her? She's the most damnably nondescript woman I've ever met.
I fancy she might embody that line of Robert Burns. A chiel's among ye, taking notes. I imagine Miss Wills spends much of her time taking notes. There are sharp eyes behind those unflattering glasses of hers. I think you'll find that anything worth noticing in this affair has already been noticed by Miss Wills.
Really? Well, while we're here, we'd better have a word with the housekeeper. What did Crossfield say her name was?
Leckie. Mrs. Leckie.
Oh, that I should ever have lived to see such a thing. Such a proud day it was for all of us when the doctor was made Sir Bartholomew. And the questions the policeman asked about all the maids in the house. Good girls they are, every one of them. And no police superintendent shall make me say otherwise. Manasta having anything to do with murder.
This man Ellis, did you find anything unusual about him?
Well, I did and I didn't. See, for one thing, he was standoffish. He kept himself to himself. Spent a lot of time in his own room, and he was, well, there was something.
You did not suspect that he was not really a butler?
all knows that he'd been in service all right. The things he knew. And about the best people in society, too. But he wasn't like any butler I've ever worked with before. He arranged the work differently.
And what did Sir Bartholomew think of him?
Oh, he was pleased enough. He even had a bit of a joke with him.
Well, what did he say?
Well, Mr. Ellis come up with a telephone message and Sir Bartholomew asked him if he'd got the name right. And Mr. Ellis said, quite sure. Oh, speaking respectful, of course.
Go on, Mrs. Leckie.
Well, Sir Bartholomew laughed and said, you're a good fellow, Ellis. A first-class butler. Don't you agree, Mrs. Leckie? And I was so surprised, sir, at the master speaking like that, that, well, I didn't know what to think.
What was the telephone message? Can you remember?
It was from the sanatorium, about a patient who had just arrived there and who'd stood the journey well.
Do you remember the name?
Yeah. It was a queer name, sir. A Mrs. de Rushbridger. Well, something like that.
Ah, yes, not an easy name to get right on the telephone.
And what about the guests? Did you notice anything unusual about their behaviour?
Oh, well, sir, that Miss Wills, she wasn't quite the class of the others. Well, she did things a real lady wouldn't have done. Poked and pried about. That's not a nice thing to do, not after somebody's dead. And poor Miss Sutcliffe, she quite broke down. Very warm-hearted lady.
And Mrs. Dacres?
I don't think anything would upset her much. She was just anxious to get away. Said her business would suffer.
What about her husband?
Steadied his nerves with brandy. Or unsteadied them, some would say.
And do you have any views on who might have poisoned your master, Mrs. Leckie?
Well, I suppose it must have been Mr. Ellis, seeing the way he just vanished overnight. But I don't see how he could have done it. They're saying it was something in the port. But all the gentlemen had port, and some of the ladies. And in any case, they couldn't find anything in the glass.
Thank you, Mrs. Leckie. You've been very helpful. Now, would you mind if we took a look at Mr. Ellis's room?
Oh, no, sir, I've no objection. Of course, the police have been all over it, but they couldn't find a thing.
So what do you think, Sarathwaite?
Well, the only thing...
Yeah? Go on, man.
It struck me as a little odd the way Sir Bartholomew joked with his butler. It seemed somehow so uncharacteristic.
It was uncharacteristic. I knew Tolly well, better than you did, and I can tell you he wasn't a facetious sort of man. But where does it get us? What is curious is that it occurred immediately after that telephone message.
About the patient who had arrived at the sanatorium?
Yes. And I think it's a fair deduction to assume it was that telephone message which was the cause of Tolly's sudden hilarity. I can't imagine what it could have been, but I'm certain there must be some significance in that message. Something tells me that this Mrs. de Rushbridger may have something to do with the mystery.
Well, I can't say I think it's very likely, but this must be Ellis's room. We'll find something here that the police passed over.
Of course, they were looking for evidence of Ellis's guilt. We're looking for evidence of his innocence, a very different matter.
There doesn't seem to be much in the way of evidence of any kind. Boots neatly polished, a couple of extremely well-cut suits.
Somebody's cast-off, perhaps, given to him in his various situations.
There is one thing that is rather puzzling. No sign at all of his butler's kit.
Ah.
So he must have been wearing it when he did his vanishing act. Any man in his senses would have changed into an ordinary suit.
Yes, it is rather odd. Almost as if he hadn't gone at all. No letters, no papers. Ah, a cutting about a cure for corns. A bottle of ink, no pen. And it doesn't look as if the blotter's going to tell us much.
No, it doesn't look as if he's used it at all.
That's rather odd, don't you think?
Well, how do you mean?
Well, chap usually writes letters.
Well, not if he's a criminal. Well, there's a splash of ink by the fireplace. Could be quite recent.
Oh, let me see.
It looks as if he dropped his fountain pen. But why should he drop it by the gas fire?
No, perhaps he threw it across the room. Fountain pens can be damned irritating.
What if...
Eh?
What if he was burning papers? Something like that.
Well, you don't burn papers on a gas fire. Hmm. But he might have been writing something at the table and suddenly heard somebody coming.
The police, perhaps?
Yes.
And he rushes over and shoves the papers under the gas fire and drops the fountain pen while he's doing it.
Sounds a bit far-fetched.
Well, why don't we see if there's anything behind the fire?
Right, I'll give it a try. Yes, there is something there, I think. Something white. Yeah, but I can't get at it. We want something like a woman's hatpin.
Well, we're not likely to find one in here. Oh, there's a paper knife on the table. Here, see if we can get it with that.
Ah, thanks. Yep. It's coming. Got it. Looks as though you were right, Satterthwaite. Sheets of crumpled writing paper. Here.
Oh, they seem to be drafts of the same letter. Listen to this. This is to say that the writer of this letter does not wish to cause unpleasantness about what he saw tonight. Now, he gave that up and tried again. John Ellis, butler, has certain facts concerning Sir Bartholomew's death in his possession. He has not yet given these facts to the police. And yet again. I know how Sir Bartholomew died. I haven't said anything to the police. If you will meet me... And it breaks off there. Presumably that was when he heard somebody coming.
Well, it doesn't get us very far. If the fellow had only headed his effusions, sir or madam, it would have helped a bit.
At least one thing is clear. Ellis may have been a scoundrel, but he didn't murder Sir Bartholomew.
Was that why he slipped out in his butler's clothes? To meet the murderer?
I imagine he was paid to disappear.
I'm beginning to have a nasty suspicion that poor Ellis may well have disappeared for good. The man he went out to meet had already killed, twice.
And will probably have no compunction about doing so again.
So we may now be faced with a third murder. Come on, Satterthwaite, let's get out of this room. It's beginning to give me the shivers.
In part two of Agatha Christie's three-act tragedy, Hercule Poirot was played by John Moffat, Mr. Satterthwaite by George Cole, Sir Charles Cartwright, Michael Cochrane, Egg Litton Gore, Beth Chalmers, Colonel Johnson, John Baddeley, Superintendent Crossfield, Martin Hyder, Mrs. Leckie, Kathleen Helm, the little boy, Tom Glenister. Three-act tragedy is dramatized for radio by Michael Bakewell and directed by Enid Williams.